I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and the cartoons back then were so much better than the cartoons that you see today. And so if you're my age or older, you probably like the same ones that I did. So I'll show you the cartoon character, and you tell me who it is, okay? How about this one? Anybody, shout it out. I'm the sheriff in these parts. My name is Huckleberry Hound. How about this one? I love Droopy. That makes me mad. I'm going to slay you, dragon. Remember him? How about this one? Camp down, raise a sing a song, doo-dah. I say, son, that's Foghorn Leghorn. He was the preacher of cartoons. And the quotes that he left us, check some of them out. Well, that kid's about as sharp as a pound of wet liver. Well, I say, she reminds me of Paul Revere's ride, Little Light in the Belfry. The snow is so deep, farmer's going to have to jack up the cows to milk them. Go away, I say, go away, son, you bother me. I love Foghorn Leghorn. I love Snagglepuss. Remember Snagglepuss, the pink mountain lion that would say, exit, stage right even. Remember him? Who are these guys right here? Everybody knows Tom and Jerry. It's like Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Everybody knows Tom and Jerry, created in 1940 by William Hanna and Joseph Barbera. And I couldn't get enough of them. I mean, I love Tom and Jerry. I even had Jared, even though it was well past his day, I had him watch them, and he fell in love with them, too. I wished at one point that I'd never shown him Tom and Jerry because it came back to bite me in a Walmart in Cheviot, outside of Cincinnati. We're looking for Cincinnati Reds shirts. He's about 4 years old. We walk in the store. I've never been in that store. He says, Dad, I got to go to the bathroom. Well, I know when he says that, I got about a 60-second window, and I better get him somewhere. So I ask a lady, how do I get to the bathroom in here? I've never been in here. And she said, well, you go this way. I said, is that the shortest way? She said, yeah. Well, it took me right through the women's lingerie section to get to the bathroom. So I'm walking with my head down, and Jared says, hey, Dad, and he lets go of my hand, try to find me, and off he goes. Seriously, we're going to play hide and seek. Well, you got to go to the bathroom, and I'm standing here in the women's lingerie. So I can't find him, and all of a sudden, he finds me. He starts yelling, hey, Dad, I look, he's standing on a table. He's got a woman's bikini top above his head. And he announces to anyone listening, hey, Dad, on Tom and Jerry, they use these as parachutes. Well, I'm mortified. Nowhere for me to hide. And then, as if on cue, one of the ladies says, hey, aren't you the preacher at Bright Christian Church? And I said, where's that? We're visiting from Florida. Man, there was nowhere for me to hide. These past few weeks, I've been studying in depth, for my own personal study, the character attributes of God. There are about 182 of them listed in the Bible. But the big three, which you've heard before, I don't think you understand how they work together. You never really think about this. The third one is my favorite. The coolest trait of God, I think, I want to preach to you about today. But here's the big three mentioned in the Bible. He's omniscient, which just means God knows everything. He's omnipotent, which means he can do anything he wants. He's all-powerful. And then my favorite, omnipresent, which means he's everywhere at the same time. Have you ever considered how these three work together? First of all, God knows what needs to be done. That's because he's omniscient. He has the power to do in your life what needs to be done because he's omnipotent. And he's where he needs to be to do what needs to be done because he's omnipresent. It's that third one that I want to talk to you about this morning because it's a question that came up recently with Hurricane Florence. Some of the devastation that we've seen, and we've seen it before, on the coastlines in this country, the Carolinas are digging out right now, and I've read some incredible stories of tragedy and heartache and destruction and heroism, but I've heard the question asked over and over again. It's an important question. It's a question that everybody asks, whether you believe or not, whether you're skeptical or not, whether you're hurting or you feel abandoned. And here's the question, and it's a good one. Where is God when I need him most? I'm okay with that question because I have an answer. Psalm 139 has got to be one of the coolest texts in all of the Bible. Check out this section. You've searched me, Lord. You know me. You know when I sit, when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out, my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge, too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your hand will guide me. And I love this. This is the second time in the Bible this is mentioned. Your right hand. Your right hand, only one for the Lord is needed. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. We didn't read it all, but Psalm 139 hits all three of these main attributes of God. Verses 1 through 6 talks about the knowledge of God. He knows all about us. Verse 13 and 14 talks about the power of God. He created us. Verse 7 through 12 talks about the presence of God. He's everywhere we are. So here's what I want to do this morning, and we can do it in fairly short order. I want to talk to you about what omnipresence means and what it brings, okay? What it means and what it brings. Number one, omnipresence means God can't be contained in a building. Now, before you say no duh, Mark, before you say that, let me tell you how important this point is, because I grew up in the church hearing, we're going to the Lord's house today. And I honestly believed he lived there, and we would go see him, and then we would leave, and we'd say goodbye, you're in your house, and we'll come back and see you next Sunday in your house again. Now, I'm never trying to burst bubbles. I don't like to be a downer for people, but can I tell you this? Nowhere in the Bible, and I've searched, nowhere do we find in the Bible where the church building is ever referred to as the Lord's house. Now, that might be your family tradition, and you might have grew up saying, let's go to the Lord's house, and I understand the symbolism and the term, but this is only a church because we came today. Otherwise, it would just be a building. The church comes, the church goes, God is here, God is there, God is everywhere. It's a misnomer to think that this is somehow the Lord's house more than this is the Lord's house. Secondly, omnipresence means God cannot be confined to a city or one nation. We've become morally arrogant in America, thinking that God's on our side and no one else's. And the truth has always been that God is no more present anywhere than where you are right now and where everyone else is right now. I remember going straight from the church once I was a kid and formulating all this stuff in my mind. And I heard the preacher say at church on a Sunday night that the Lord is with us here tonight. Well, that's cool. Well, then my dad and mom throw me in the car. We go to Versailles, about 12 miles north, to a funeral visitation. And I clearly heard the preacher say, thank you, Lord, for being with us here tonight. And I thought, well, we just left him at Cross Plains. I just heard the preacher down the road say, the Lord is with us right now. And now this guy in Versailles is trying to tell me the Lord is here. And it took me a while to understand that, you know what? He's here, he's there, he's everywhere. It's an amazing thought that there are Christians all around the globe worshiping this morning and declaring the same truth. They can all say at the same time, the Lord is in this place. I heard about a man who decided to write a book about churches around the country. So he started in San Francisco, and he made his way east. He went to a large church, and he began taking pictures and writing notes, and he noticed a golden telephone in a back room that had a sign by it that said $10,000 per minute. So he asked the preacher, what is up with that phone? And the preacher told him, well, that's a hotline to heaven. You can talk to God himself today, but obviously you have to pay the price. Well, the guy thought, well, that's kind of ridiculous. So he left the church, and he made his way east. He went to large churches, went to St. Louis, went to Dallas, Chicago, made his way toward our state. And finally, he arrived in Indiana, and at all those other big churches, same thing, golden phones that said $10,000 per minute. He goes into a church outside of Bloomington, and he sees a sign above a golden phone that's different than all the other churches. In this church in Bloomington, it says 35 cents per minute. So he went to the preacher, and he said, well, how can that be? It costs thousands of dollars to call heaven in every other church I've been in, but only 35 cents here. How can that be? And the preacher said, son, you're in Indiana now. It's a local call. Now, I'm only joking, but only half joking. But there are some who believe God does not care about anyone but us. I heard a preacher the other day say this. Third world countries are third world countries because God is not there. That couldn't be more scripturally incorrect and offensive. God doesn't wear red, white, and blue. He didn't cheer for the United States in the Olympics. I'm sorry to burst your bubble. He's a global God. And this morning, my friend Jay Henry in India can say, Lord, thank you for being here. My buddy Jeff Vines in New Zealand can say, Lord, thank you for being here. He's everywhere. He can't be contained in a building. Can't be confined to one city or one nation. A couple other things it means. It means God is present whether you believe it or not. In 1961, when I was born, Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin orbited the Earth for the first time. When he returned, he announced to the world that he had looked out of his space capsule and he could now definitively declare he had not seen God anywhere. How about that? Atheistic. I was there. I went to heaven. Never saw God. I love the reply printed in a local paper by a Kentucky preacher who said this. If he'd have jumped out of that ship, he'd have seen God all right. Often there are those who never let truth get in the way of what they believe. And the truth is, God is present whether you believe it or not. Here's one more thing it means. It means God is available to us wherever we go. I look back and honestly, the hindsight can bring me some comfort because every time I look back in my life, I'm reminded, no matter where I ended up, God was already there. He was already where I was going, and he went with me when I got there. Can you imagine what it would be like to get down on your knees and pray only to have an angel tell you, I'm sorry, but God's busy in the Middle East right now. He'll get back to you. Gertrude Turner was a sweet lady in Lawrenceburg, married to Maurice for 60 years. I loved that couple. He went to be with the Lord, and that left her alone, little farm lady. And people would ask her, are you lonely? And I love Gertrude's response. Lonely, I guess, maybe, sometimes. But then before I let the loneliness kick in, she said, I remind myself, I'm never alone. I've seen 15 to 20 civil wars break out across the world in my lifetime. A civil war is when one group of people in the same place get into it with another group of people. I watched the civil war in Bosnia play out on my TV as the Bosnians and the Croatians could not tolerate each other. They're all Yugoslavians, but there was civil war. The beautiful town of Sarajevo became the epicenter of the bloodbath. If you left your house to get food or water, snipers in nearby buildings would pick you off. Churches would meet on Sundays and bombs would explode, killing hundreds of Christians. Then the public library, beautiful old building, was hit with a mortar shell. And when that news hit, a young musician put on a tuxedo, check this out, grabbed his cherished cello and set up camp in the rubble where the library had been destroyed. While the war is going on, Vedran played Bach and Beethoven. And for the first time in months, the shooting stopped. And for 2 hours, everyone in the town leaned in and would ask, is that music that I hear? Place and time like this, somebody's playing music. Next day, Vedran put on his tux, headed to a local cemetery with his cello, where thousands of young men who had been killed on both sides of the war were buried. And again, the shooting stopped. And everyone leaned in and said, is that music again? For 22 straight days, Vedran put on a tux, took his cello, and would play all around the town. The shooting would stop, and everyone would listen. And then when he was done, the bombing would begin again. After the war, an American reporter asked him if he was crazy to play music during war. And I love what he said. The gunfire and the explosions were constant and persistent and with us every hour of every day. Well, I wanted everyone to know the music was with us also. It was constant and persistent, but it was just being drowned out and could not be heard. But it was with us. It was always with us. And I love this thought. God is constant. God is persistent. He is always with you. You've just let other things drown out the music. It's been playing the whole time. It's what omnipresence means. Let me say it this way. God is always already there before you get there, and he will be with you even before you arrive. It means God can't be contained in a building. God can't be confined to a city or a country. God's present whether you believe it or not, and God's available to us wherever we go. That's what it means. But here's what it brings. Two things. And the first one scares me to death. It brings conviction. Omnipresence means God was there every time I screwed up. That's what it means. He heard every word I said because he was right there. He saw everything I did because he was right there. Now, I don't mean to throw you off on a theological ledge here, but I'm going to tell you what I believe about this subject and move on from it and see what you think. I believe, and I could make a biblical case, I believe that people who have died that we love that have gone on can observe us right now. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, we can debate it, not right now. That would be awkward and uncomfortable. We can debate it and talk about it, and I'll show you my scriptural case. And I know you have questions. Well, wouldn't they be sad if they... Yeah. Okay. All that aside, I believe, scripturally speaking, people can observe us right now, everything we do. My grandma died years and years ago. I was in junior high. And because I already had come to that belief, it affected my behavior for a while. Because I thought, you know, let me see who I'm working with here. I've screwed up royally in my life many times. Anybody in that car with me? Raise your hands, please. Get them up. I want to see who doesn't raise their hand so I can put you up for mayor of this town, all right? She'll put it up herself, Chip, all right? You don't need to help her. You know, I have, but you know what I'm glad about? You all weren't there to see most of them. I'm glad about that. It would affect your opinion of me, I'm pretty sure. So my grandma dies, and I'm thinking, you know, I've come to the belief that everyone that has left us that we love can watch us. Oh, my gosh. My grandma just saw what I did. I was always able to hide stuff from her. She just saw what I said to that person. She just saw it all. And it literally affected my behavior. And then, as I got older, I thought, how dumb am I? Because God has been watching this the whole time. How come that didn't affect my behavior? How come I didn't let the fact that God sees what I'm doing and God knows what I'm doing, how come I didn't let that affect my behavior? This thought of omnipresence and God always there, I'm telling you what, it makes me shake in my shoes. Hebrews 4:13, nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom you must give account. Can I give you my Mark Fugate improper English version? We can't get away with nothing. We can't get away with nothing. The crying prophet said it this way, who can hide in secret places so that I cannot see them? Do I not fill heaven and earth, declares the Lord? I took a youth ministry in Lawrenceburg. I had preached at a small country church for 2 years. I had no elders. I had no staff. It was just me. But I can't even get along with myself, so it was good training. And I went to Lawrenceburg to be the youth minister because they paid me more. And I was in school, and I couldn't figure out how to get through school. My mom and dad helped, but, help was limited. So my first chance to work under somebody. There was a senior minister there. I was the youth guy, music guy, preached some. Change toilet paper, whatever needed to be done. And he was a practical joker. In my office, the building's kind of constructed like this. It's a little bit bigger. And we had a baptistry that was a little higher even, and my office was to the left of the baptistry up some steps. You had to walk through the auditorium to get to my office. And I did. My first week there, I'm walking through a dark auditorium to go to my office. I'm thinking about some things, and I'm walking down one of the side aisles. Well, that bird hid under a pew. And I ain't thinking about somebody being in there. And as soon as I walked by his pew, he reached out from under the pew, and he grabbed my ankle, and he said, gotcha. Well, because I care what you think about me, I won't tell you what I said, okay? But I would have never put it on an interview, I tell you that right now. And I plotted my revenge. I'm all for practical joking as long as I don't get hurt. So I plotted my revenge. And one night we were going to have a meeting, and I watched him walk into the bathroom. I thought, here's my chance. So I took a cup of water, and I threw it over the stall. And I heard, hey, hey! I got him. I left the bathroom only to walk by the preacher in the hallway. What did I just do? The chairman of my elders was in the bathroom stall and got drenched by me. It was the shortest ministry in the history of that church. I'm glad God doesn't hide behind doors to scare us. His presence brings conviction. I'm telling you, it does to me. I don't know about you. It does me. But there's a positive to that, too. It not only brings conviction, and here's the last thing I want to mention, it brings comfort. If he knows all the screw-ups, then he also knows all the scars, right? If he knows all the junk that I've done, he also knows all the junk that I've been through. And he cares about me. One of my favorite Old Testament scriptures has always been Isaiah 41:10. Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. Here's the second time this is said. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. If somebody ever asks you, is God right-handed or left-handed, you tell him. He's right-handed. What a promise. Always with me, always there. That brings me some comfort. You should memorize Psalm 34:18, and some of you have. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted, saves those who are crushed in spirit. I don't know if you recognize this man or not. His name is Dawson Trotman. In the 1940s, there was a crisis brewing on college campuses. There was sort of a decline in morals and ideology. You see the end result of that now with college campuses today. This man began to write periodicals that would help young people navigate through those waters. So he started a group called the Navigators. Maybe you've heard of them. Dawson Trotman in the 1950s was in a boat with some college students. They were water skiing, just having fun. There was a young woman in the back of the boat who didn't know how to swim but was afraid to admit it. Sadly, she fell out of the boat. Dawson Trotman recognized that she could not swim. She was having trouble, so he jumped in. As he attempted to rescue her, she fought him, and he was able to hold her above the water, but he was not able to keep himself above the water. The boat circled around. They retrieved her and Trotman from the water, but he had taken in too much. He didn't survive. The young lady did. Billy Graham did his funeral, and afterwards Time magazine picked up on the influence of Dawson Trotman. And what stood out to me in the article was the title, which is on the headstone in the cemetery where he's buried. How cool is this? Dawson Trotman, always holding someone up. I love that, and I admire what he did, but let's close by considering the one who is truly holding someone up. My upbringing highlighted the transcendency of God. God is holy, God is just, God is the God of heaven and earth, the creator of the universe, and honestly, it made it feel to me like he was a million miles away. And then I met someone when I was in high school who talked about Jesus as if he were talking about somebody he just had lunch with. I want that. I want that. You know, when you think of all the world religions like Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, they all have this impersonal relationship with their deity. I don't want that. It's absent of any tenderness or relationship or that daily togetherness. I don't want that. What makes Christianity so awesome is that God has this genuine, passionate affection for me, and he wants to spend time with me in my presence. It's true that God knows all about my sins and secrets, makes me uncomfortable, but it's equally true he knows about my scars, those things I've been dealing with, the pain that I hide from you all, the pain that I hide from her and my family. God knows not one experience, not one test, not one biopsy, not one pain, not one loss, not one tragedy, not one problem ever came without him knowing, ever came without him noticing, and ever came without him being right there with you while it was going on. And yet many ask, Lord, don't you care? Don't you care my mother's suffering Alzheimer's and she can't remember my name? Don't you care my business is failing? Don't you care? Well, you go ahead and ask, because there's an answer. And the answer is seen in the sign of a cross and an empty tomb. And the answer is seen in a woman caught in adultery who was not stoned to death, but shown love and forgiveness by Jesus. And the answer can be seen in an eternal heaven built by God for us where we will never have another care. And we'll never remember the cares we had. And where we'll know for sure and forever, he cares. Yes, he cares. And he's there. I found something. I'll close with this. This kind of stuff that I think is so cool. When I don't see something in a scripture that I have read forever and ever and ever, and then a light goes on, it's like, what? Why did I never see this? And I want to illustrate it for you so you know what I'm talking about. Let's say a mother has a son in the military, and he's been there for quite a while. And she talks about him, right? He's coming home. He's going to do this when he's home. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. He's going to give me a hug. He's going to spend time. He. But then he walks through the door. And how does she refer to him now? You come here and give me a hug. You come and eat supper with me. You come and tell your mom you love her, right? It goes from he to you. Check out Psalm 23:1-4. Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right path for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they come. Why did he go from he to you? Why did he not say, even though I walk through the valley, he will be with me? Why did he go from he to you? I'll tell you why. Because even though he's there every day, every moment, we know that, but we still are, well, he will be so good to you. He loves you. But when you're up against it, when you're facing that valley, that shadow, that real heartache, you don't want to talk about God as if he's God there. You want to say, you are with me. You are with me. There's a big difference between he is with me and you are with me. Thank you, Lord. You are with me here. You are with me there. You are with me everywhere. Amen.